January 24th, 2010, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Catch up! bait ears one from the other. Finding hollow tunnels, intercepting one another. Pointless, eerie mazes. Leading to its start, and that could be any place. The start and the end. Only where you pause. Don't pause, brother. Don't pause, sister. Cause then you might have to think, God, why will we ever want to do that? Don't you know where it's gonna get us? And if we don't know, so what?
on the verge of finding, on the verge of finding, on the verge of finding.
Scares the shit out of me. Scares the fuck out of me. Scares the shit out of me. Scares the fuck out of me. On the verge of finding. Of words. Where's your Houston going? Where the fuck do we go from here? Who's gonna touch who? Who's gonna touch what? On the verge of finding. On the verge of finding. You wanna find? Let's find. Find. But keep it away from me. She's smoothing out our reviews. Sounds of 8 ears, one from the other. Finding hollow tunnels. Intercepting one another. Pointless, eerie mazes. And that could be any place. The start and the end. It's only where you pause. Don't pause, brother. Don't pause, sister. Cause then you might have to think. God, why will we ever want to do that? Oh, you know where it's gonna get us? And if we don't know, so what?
Live from Pedro's show. Let's mute that there. Hey, Brother Matt, how you doing?
Good, good.
Sunday here in Pedro. Played last night in Long Beach, 11.4 miles, deep piazzas. Second man after recording with Pete and Jer at Pete's pad for his wife, Lil's, making a Croatia record.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, an album for there. So they had me do a song. It was like one they already had, and they had me redo. I don't know, they had kind of a Rick Argent, what is it? That guy in the Zombies. You remember Organ Player?
Yeah.
And they had that song, what was his big hit? Hold Your Head Up? And it had a bass line like that. And I said, no, let's make it more like, what was that band from D.C. in the 70s? Shack Up? Bang Barum? They had a weird name, a one-hit wonder disco band. So I used a bass line like that. Can I have it?
Yeah.
Sure. We got some guests, Brother Matt.
Yeah, welcome.
Hey, is this on here?
Joe Biza. Yeah, you can just
How are you, Mike?
There.
How you guys doing?
If you put it over there, then Don can talk.
Oh, all right.
You're the guest today.
No,
hey, how you doing?
Look, it'll work for both of you, I swear. One don't have to whoop on the other
Bogart.
One. It's a sensitive thing. In fact, if you listen to last week's show with Jack, you can see how sensitive it is. Because, right, every beer bottle. And, you know about this, right? If you wrap things on the... Brother Matt tried to desensitize it with the doily.
The push factor.
It's a very comfortable studio you got here.
You do a little... Well, it ain't a studio. This is the love grotto.
Oh, okay.
Love grotto. Okay.
Right there on the roof, see? Yeah. Or the overhead.
It's late.
On the Pleasure Point. In San Pedro. So, but if you listen to last week's show, Jack, you know, you wouldn't even know that doily existed because he crunched up, mashed up so much noise. And then started wailing on the guitar. Really.
Yeah, I heard a bit of that.
He would talk, did you hear that? Yeah, he would talk all little tiny and then just wail on the guitar. So we kind of muffed up some distortion. I tried to get a happy medium. I should say what we play. We start off the show with John Coltrane doing What's New. And then On the Verge of Finding live, something from Sacrum Trust, World Broken. You remember that record, Joe?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Well, we've got Joe Baez, and then to his starboard is Don Dalton, who's come home from Salt Lake City for a little visit. And
was at the show last night.
Yeah, you were in Long Beach.
Yeah.
Long Beach. But I think, Joe, we recorded that 1985 in Santa Monica.
It's yeah,
the only
the
time
caves.
I ever wore a tuxedo.
That was, yeah, really.
Whose idea was that?
I think it was Joe Carducci's.
Okay.
There was a lot of...
It's hard to tell by listening.
...detail behind that album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess there were supposed to be pictures to go with it.
Originally, it's
right?
funny because...
Or pictures? Video or something. No, there was reason for wearing the tuxedo.
I think that was just Jack's idea. He wanted to,
oh, it was Jack's idea?
Yeah, he wanted to put a little kind of theatrics in it.
Because it's hard to hear the tuxedo.
Yeah, exactly. You don't hear that. You just, well, maybe you do if, you know, it's in the notes.
Affected
there,
the
you.
Plan. Yeah, I never, what was that belt thing?
A cummerbund.
Yeah, a cummerbund. That was kind of bearing up on me. You know, I was in between the bass. I was in Belen as much then, but
better than Belen.
It was like Belen. Pseudo
belt.
It's a strap on belt.
Strap on belt.
But it wasn't really in the plan for me to do that because they had a great bass player who, right at the last minute, wouldn't do it. Right?
Yeah, Bob Fitzer, who just drove by a moment ago.
Excellent bass player. And for some reason, he got, because it had to be improvised.
It was all improvised, yeah. And Bob is a really good bass player, but and we practiced it. We did it a few times in the studio. He's pretty good at it, but
yeah.
When it came time to do it, he realized he didn't want to do that, and it was going to be his first record, and I think he wanted something more solid or something. He just
I got to be
out.
In the studio with him again when you did the We Became Snakes. He played really good on that record.
Yeah, right. But I remember calling Carducci at SST and saying...
It was within days, right?
I said, we're not going to do it, because Bob just decided not to. And Joe was saying, well, just the three of you do it. Do it without a bass player. I said, no, no. And all of a sudden, Mike picks up the extension phone. I'll do it.
That's right. I was
that's
in
right.
The,
he was working at SST then.
That's right.
I said, what? And then that's what we did. You know, he just jumped right in and said, I'll do it. And we did it.
Yeah, yeah. So...
am I too loud?
There was a there was a thing in there. It wasn't exactly captured because after the recording, then Joe went to town editing on it and actually crafted a good thing out of the whole gig. Because you can imagine there were some lulls in the creative process. Some just trying to get hooked onto some. So when Joe went there and mixed it and edited it, he actually turned it into a pretty coherent piece of work. It's one of the best records I've been on. And, it was, okay, I foisted a little bit, but not really because I didn't know that situation. Actually, I didn't even know about the recording that well. Carducci was talking about something like that, them doing. All of a sudden, it was on. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't. So it was like, fuck, I'll do it.
Yeah, you kind of saved the day on that one. I wouldn't have done it without a bass.
Yeah, I go back, too, to the first. In fact, we're going to play something here. Jack Brewer gave me some obstacles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A song called Help Us?
Helpless.
Help Us. Well, that's what Jack called it. It's Helpless.
That's how I remember it. Okay.
Do you know where this was recorded? Because I actually, before we even played with George Hurley, we were just starting to, they came over to his shed with Dezzo. I guess Dezzo was a member.
Well, that's
I think, should go all the way back.
Yeah, that's 1979. That's how I actually that's how I met Jack. And the first time I was invited to any kind of musical situation with Jack Brewer is he wanted me to record his band, The Obstacles, because he had a tape recorder. So I used to work with him, so I went there and just operated the machine.
But that was that weird, because it was at George Hurley's place.
Oh, no, no, this is at his studio.
Oh, no, but when I saw you guys in Dezzo, I don't know how you guys were there, but you were there jamming in the garage in George's shed. Oh, you remember this? And I tried out on bass, didn't make it.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But look, we should go further. Remember that? It was Dezzo.
And
you and Jack, and there was, I don't even think, a drummer yet.
No,
because you ended up getting a Pedro guy, Rick Wilder,
and
before and, Bobby.
Oh yeah,
remember that? The bass player ended up being Pedro guy, Louis.
Both of them, Louis. I just Louis, seen him last week.
Mad Max. He went through a couple names.
Louis and Richie.
That's right. That was the first rhythm section.
They were kind of a duo there.
But I think by that time you weren't Obstacles. You had changed.
Yeah, we were trying to start something
new. Yeah, but why don't we go back to the beginning about you and music? Because it's an interesting story. Most dudes start as teenagers playing, but not you.
Yeah, I started getting serious about music when I was 27 years old. And I'd played guitar before that a bit. Like with the neighborhood friends, you know, we'd jam on T-Rex songs or something like that. And then after a year, I stopped.
I actually saw you at Peck Park helping out a band.
Oh, really?
On those stairs at the Peck Center.
What year was
that?
It
was a Wemos band, early 70s. That's before punk.
I was a roadie for a Chicano rock band.
Yeah, yeah, they were Latin.
That's kind of see me doing that.
Type of. They were rocking, but they had a Latin kind of trip. Yeah. And Joe was helping out. He had long hair at the time. But I remember later on matching the faces because I was maybe 14 years old. I was really young, but I would check out bands that would play like these kind of things that were put on by the park. And you guys played on the steps, or you were part of this unit.
Yeah,
I can't
remember
their name.
Tantar.
Okay.
When was that, Joe?
I think that was 1970, 71.
Whoa.
Yeah, like that? It's like 13 71? Or 14 years old. Huh. Were they Wemos?
Yeah.
Okay. So the neighborhood thing, and so that's where you're jamming the guitar.
I wasn't playing music then.
Not even yet.
No,
okay.
I was just... I think that's when I first picked up an acoustic guitar and decided to play because of those guys.
One of the guys in the band would, okay.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. And
okay, but you didn't really start playing until later in your
20s. Later on, yeah.
I mean, you've been an artist a lot. When did you start drawing and painting?
I guess since junior high.
Yeah, so that's what you did first. And then, extended that over to music.
Yeah, it was sort of an experiment. I thought I'd try to do music as an art experiment. And I met Jack, and he had all the equipment, so I thought, I'll just try this out for a year or so, you know.
You and Jack worked together, that's right.
Yeah, and then it just kept going. I never went back to doing art anymore. I just started doing music after that.
Well, a little bit. I saw the Reactionary tribute record.
Oh, yeah, I just did that cover.
Yeah. So you do a little still.
Well, I'm trying to go back to drawing again.
Ah.
And painting.
Okay. Nothing. We're talking like late 70s, right?
With
getting on the guitar and playing with
Jack
Brewer.
Yeah, 1979.
Because he was playing with the cat he told me named Marshall Mello.
Right.
And they had,
they had that group, The Obstacles.
Well, even before that, Newport and...
Yeah, that's when they were just the two of them.
They had this name, Newport, two names, but it wasn't their names.
Was it like, their middle name or something?
Was that what it was? It was like Newport and Millhouse or
something. Milton.
Milton.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess Jack was doing a lot of dusting, so he said it was kind of a hard time for him. And he was into Doors and Bowie, but you really couldn't hear it. And I think it was more Marshall Mello's kind of music. And Jack.
Yeah, they would write songs together. And that's when I met them. They were doing that. And I went to their rehearsal, and I was recording them, and the drummer just couldn't keep a beat, you know. So the next day at work, Jack says, well, what do you think? And I didn't want to say anything. I said, maybe you need a bass player, because they didn't have a bass player.
Yeah.
Thinking maybe that would help the drummer, you know, and he just didn't say anything for a while, and then a few minutes later he said, why don't you play bass for us, you know? And I thought, So then I thought I'd give it a try. So I played bass with those guys for about a month or two. But they thought I was trying to turn it into a punk band, and they started to quit, you know. I was ruining their band.
Yeah.
A punk band. So eventually they all quit, and it was just Jack and myself. And then we tried to put a band together at that point.
It took a year.
Yeah, Dez was with us for a while, but then he left to join Red Cross.
Right, right.
It was a struggle. And then it wasn't until we got Rich and Lewis that we actually had a band. We had a band before that, too, but it didn't hold. Yeah, when Dez first came in. It gets, I forget all the details. But
I know how you ended up at Pedro Georgie's. That was so trippy, but I remember jamming with you guys there. Then the other weird coincidence, you moved to Pedro. You ended up living underneath the Boone on 19th
Street. That's weird, isn't it? Yeah.
That was totally wild. And because we saw you at gigs. We knew you at gigs. We didn't know you personally, but we knew of you. That's how I matched you up at,
oh, really?
At from the park. Yeah, I mean, you know, in those days the scene was so small and distinctive. In fact, I still see people from them days. I recognize them. You know, you'd be talking to somebody and then they'd be playing.
To me, that's the logical next step if you're a real fan of rock music, I guess, at that time.
Yeah.
And that you had these big bands on the stage and the arenas. And
yeah.
The next step is, you know, you're such a rock fan, what are you going to do? Well, I'll just have my own band, you know, I'll just do that myself.
I know, but the situation, Long Beach Arena, I'm going to play there. But no, a little club.
Everyone just thought, well, who cares about that?
Yeah,
they're just going to play in that little...
Actually, I didn't know about clubs,
you know,
until...
Who cares if I can do a guitar solo or not or whatever.
It's just you're playing for your friends.
Yeah, right. Or just an expression, you know. Mm. It was great, I thought.
And writing own songs, not just copying.
Yeah.
That was a lot different. Every band I knew, even if the dudes could play well, they copied. And punk guys, they didn't. They went right away and started writing songs. And that was, nowadays, that's pretty normal.
That was
cool. But in those days, that was a way different reality. Nobody just wrote songs.
Well, later, when the Orange County thing happened,
yeah.
then they started to copy each other. They wanted to sound like the popular band that was from Huntington Beach or something, you know. Mm-hmm. So, with a mixture of another band that's kind of popular, you'd always hear that, you know.
So when you got into guitar, who did you like?
Did
you have guitar, not hero, but like inspirer?
Well, the very first time I started to play guitar, let me think. I liked glitter rock then at that time.
Oh, yeah, so Mark Bolan.
Mark Bolan and David Bowie and...
Mick Ronson.
Stuff like that. Mick Ronson, yeah, I liked the stuff he did on there.
So did you listen to records and like try to figure them licks out?
No, never. Once in a while I try. I still don't do that. But
no, but I mean, in those days, that's what we did.
See, that's... Yeah, I don't know why I don't do that.
No,
it was helpful, you know?
I don't know, because we didn't know about this idea of trying to write your own songs. We just didn't know.
Well, when I actually started to play with Jack and decided I was going to play guitar, I wanted to take it from a place where there were no roots. You know, I didn't want to have any kind of background, so... At that point, I said, I'm not going to come from anywhere, you know, I'm just going to make up my own thing. So that's was my approach. It was kind of my art extension, you know.
Well, we got into that, too, when we found out other dudes were doing that, that you didn't have to copy records and play the standard licks. But we didn't have any idea of that at first. So we thought everybody copied records until, you know, the gods tapped you on the shoulder and... Had you come up to Mount Olympus with them and deliver the good time, you know. We had no idea about this. You just go do it because you want it. I know it sounds so simple. And
but then with reactionaries, you had that.
Reactionaries, we try.
Uh-huh.
And that's the first time I was writing songs. I mean, I wrote one song as a teenager called Mr. Bass King Outer Space. And it was terrible.
I wrote some songs when my first period. I wrote some acoustic songs that were kind of like David Bowie songs.
Yeah,
I think I wrote about 8 songs, and I recorded them on a 8-track.
Do you got them?
I lost that thing. But it was one of these 8-track home deals. Where
we're not talking 8-track like reel to reel. We're talking the plastic cartridge.
Car. So I did my songs on there, and the tape got lost or something. But
they were big square cartridges.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And they would just cut off in the, like 10
the
minutes.
Of, track.
Right. Yeah. Actually, you'd have four tracks because they were stereo.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. So it'd go click right into the middle of the song and or fade out and go out. Yeah, those were funny. Kind of a...
But yeah, for me, that I mean, the whole root, having no roots was it didn't last very long. Because I remember when I first heard the Minutemen, and we went to hear you guys rehearse, is before your first gig at Harvard College.
Well, we were getting it together
right
above you when you were living there.
Right, you guys were, yeah, but when I just went, wow, you know. Because you played about 12 songs or 10 songs, short ones. I didn't know when
yeah,
a song
really
ended
real.
Or
yeah.
began, you know, or...
Ran them
it
all
just
together.
It sounded like a weird
one big long song.
You know, it's like, wow, what was that? You know, it's
the, yeah,
that's cool. You know,
well, because the reactionaries we thought was not reactionary enough or not wild enough break mm-hmm. with our past, and so we were trying extreme. That from got ideas from that band Wire of making little, very little.
Yeah, Wire.
Also, we're watching the gigs. Yeah, Germs and stuff. These guys mm-hmm. played really short. And so we thought, wow, we should try that. Maybe.
That was a very interesting time, I thought.
Yeah, so you start playing and for Saccharine Trust, and you're playing the guitar for Jack. And you write your first... Well, first you did a song for the Cracks in the Sidewalk compilation.
Yeah, right. What's it? Hearts and Barbarians.
Hearts and Barbarians.
I think our approach then was Jack would write songs on his acoustic guitar, and he'd have a song he'd write and go, check this out. He'd play it and sing it. And I'd go, I don't want to play that A chord and then go to that G chord or whatever. So I thought, I had this idea, why don't we have the bass do that? So we'd have the bass play his chord progression.
Right.
And then I'd play another guitar part over that. I'd create some kind of different guitar over the chord progression or whatever it was, you know. So that was my approach.
Yeah, right. Right away. Right away. Yeah. I remember there were some power chord saccharine songs, but not a lot.
Yeah, you throw that in.
Yes, there would be like the anthem ones would be right. kind of more power chord. But the other ones would have the guitar either sympathetic to the melody, to singing, or counterpointing. It was very interesting kind of stuff. Like what you would find in a two-guitar band, when guitar would do this and one would do rhythm. You guys just did away with that and had the bass guy do the rhythm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. And then you made an album called, well, EP, like half album, called Pagan Icon, Pagnicons.
Mm-hmm.
Pagan Icons. And I was there, and I remember you recording it really quick.
I don't remember. Was it fast when we recorded that?
Maybe
I guess
two days.
Wow, it was that fast.
Right? Yeah, I remember.
I mean, that's the SST budget, I guess.
Yeah.
Get in there and get out of there, you know.
Yeah, our first one was one night.
Yeah.
And mixed. Ours
really?
Recorded and mixed in the first same night. Paranoid time. Yeah. And we're 002. I think you guys were 004.
Yeah, I think we had ours done before everyone, but then they kept holding off on it.
SST 003 was Jealous Again, I think.
Yeah, they had it in the back shelf for a while, and they finally released it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And those tunes, they were from the gigs, right?
Those are the early Saturn songs.
That you would
songs,
do for your shows. And, in fact, you guys went on a bunch of tours then.
With Black Flag.
Right, right. Several of them. Right?
Yeah.
Three, four, five?
Something like that. Six, I don't know.
Yeah, they did a lot of flag tours. And and then going through the rhythm sections.
Yeah, I think by that time, Holtzman was on drums and Earl was playing bass. And Rich and Lewis had left.
Right.
And then on the first tour, Holtzman decided he didn't want to be in the band anymore. He didn't want to do that.
And so Tony...
So Tony came in. I called Tony right in the middle of the tour and just asked him if he had any suggestions for a drummer, and he volunteered himself. I thought he would do that too when I called him. He said, I'll play. I said, all right. So we had a drummer even, you know, when we got back.
Right, right.
Just change things. Every time a new musician would come, it would change the sound of Sabbath.
Yeah, big time. Because the next album is Surviving You, right?
Right.
And there's another bass player. That's the Long Beach guy, Mark?
Mark Hodson, yeah.
He came in.
Earl went to the Circle Jerks.
That's right.
Rob went... Who was he playing with? The Slovenly.
Slovenly.
Yeah.
He moved up to San Francisco
right.
with those guys. And then after that, that's when you got Bob Fitzer on bass. He's
yeah,
after Mark.
Yeah.
And that's like this world broken era. But I want to... and then drums...
Yeah,
he hung
in
there.
Band
that's right.
Until the end.
That's right.
The bass players kept changing. And Bob was a friend of Tony's, so that's how that happened.
That's how he got brought in.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's stabled out by then. But by that time, there's big changes. You start making side bands.
Oh, yeah, with that
Universal Congress.
Oh, that was after Saccharin then.
Yeah, yeah. They're not happening at the same time at all?
No, Saccharin Trust, I said, let's just stop this now. So Jack and I quit the band, our own band. And then I started Universal Congress of. Because I was kind of headed that direction with this mixture of punk and jazz.
Yeah, you started...
And I wanted to do that.
You started, yeah, investigating bebop music, right?
Yeah, I think that's...
And bringing it over to guitar.
Right, I wanted to do this...
And not really like Wes Montgomery kind of thing or something, but actually like trying to play horn lines... On the guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
Not really, you know, comping jazz chords like traditional jazz guitars, but like taking the horn lines and bringing them to the guitar, which was interesting.
Yeah, so that was another step for me. But I think that's what happened with Saccharin Trust, is everyone had a different idea of what they wanted in that band. Jack was sort of into his words, and he kind of wanted a Doors kind of thing, or Jim Morrison, he wanted to, and then Fitzer was into his... kind of fusion thing, and Tony was a prog kind of guy.
Yeah, right.
He wanted to jam on the drums. He wanted to, and I had my jazz thing or whatever. So you could the
different directions
kind of pulling apart at that point.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
How did you come to jazz?
Before I got into punk rock, I discovered bebop, and I was reading a Jack Kerouac books, and there'd always be some mention of bebop and. The Tenor Man and all this kind of stuff. I go, what is this bebop? You know, I didn't like jazz. I thought,
The bebop.
But what's this bebop stuff? So I went to the library and I got some Charlie Parker records. Mm-hmm. Bird. There was something about Bird. Who's Bird? I didn't know who he was.
Yardbird, I think, was his.
Yeah, and I put that record on. And I went, wow, my head just top of my head just blew off. And I, oh,
yeah, that guy.
There was so much energy.
Yeah, he could jam.
And it was suddenly for me. It was sort of I didn't have to. Focus on current popular music. There was music. It just opened the window. The door opened up, and I realized, well, there's all kinds of music out there. I don't have to focus on popular music. So
yeah.
I started listening to bebop, and I liked the energy in it, and it sounded crazy to me. So that's what started it. Even when I went to the punk rock clubs, I was into bebop. And
yeah.
The thing I liked most about the punk gigs was the energy.
Yeah,
in the shows, the atmosphere and people on the parking lot and the alley and in the club, and the music was part of it, and the characters that were there, you know, and the personalities.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
really
yeah.
Attracted me, you know.
Yeah,
the music was just part of it.
Yeah, sure.
So it was.
It's
and plus reading those books, so you know, I was living in Wilmington and San Pedro and Torrance, so going into the city and. Being part of an urban atmosphere,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow, here I am in the city and just walking down this street here and there's this alleyway and who are these people? And it kind of reminded me of being a beatnik or something. You know? I had that feeling of those books, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, here I am and now it's, you know, whatever, 1979, 1980 or something. But I wasn't playing music until later, yeah.
But you were turned on before
you
started.
It was a latent.
Yeah.
It was a latent.
Right.
Time bomb.
Right.
Ready to go off.
A non-musician.
Because this comes in because you do the beginning Saccharin thing, and then this comes on.
Yeah, so that was my approach, non-musician. Yeah.
Right.
You know,
right,
and
right.
Then it's still like that, you know. I as years went on, I would study and practice and study on my own and try to learn about music. But it's from that same non-musician approach, because I didn't like the musician attitude of the
Musol.
Hierarchy or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't like that, so I said, I'm not going to be a musician, you know.
Yeah.
So that was my approach in the beginning. Still is, I guess.
Yeah. Just a little more articulated.
Yeah.
Here, let's play. I have some obstacles. Let's play some.
All right.
No affectionate attention. Lot from Pedro Show. Started off there with Help Us by The Obstacles, but Joe Biser remembers it as Helpless, so I don't know. That's what Jack Brewer told me. And then we heard AAA by R. Stevie Moore, a little guitar sonata, and that Woodpiles on the Side of the Road by Jack Rose. He just passed away. He was a great slide guitarist in his 40s or something, really young. And then Hang On to Yourself, something live from the Germs, the Germs copying Bowie. And Joe Biser's pissing, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I remember being on tour with Joe, and like he'd get a sip, I think bladder like this, you know, just a sip of coffee. Pull it over, Mike. Remember the first opera touring? Nels Klein, he recorded the album with me, but he couldn't tour, so Joe went and did 3 tours with me. And he had already been a touring veteran, you know, from Saccharin and Flag and all this, but a little different style touring, and you got to learn to use the piss bottle.
Yeah, I had to use that on the way over here, actually.
Oh, so all right.
It's useful.
Fuck yeah, I'm never going to suffer again.
My life. It's a long drive from L.A. to Pedro.
Yeah.
And you're 58 years old. Yeah.
So, the piss bottle, we did an interesting tour. First one was Steve Hodges, and then 2 with Bob Lee. Showing the guitar. And a trippy interpretation. Actually, there was 2 or 3 gigs, maybe 3, where there was actually 4 man opera, right? Nels came on board.
Right,
one was at Mr. T. I think one was Casbah in San Diego, and one might have been downtown Long Beach. I think it was a former bank or something. Remember, it had a high-ass roof. So they actually... But Joe came and saved the day for me because, I mean, he learned that thing quick. I mean, you had the little book, though, right?
The first time we played in New York, I had the book.
A little book between your feet or something. Right. I don't know how the fuck you saw that.
Somebody from the audience grabs this book, I'm going to be in big trouble. Because the people are right there.
But I don't know how you could see down that far. Well, that's when we had the younger eyes.
I had better eyes.
I can barely see set lists now. So I don't like to play with my glasses on. And Bob Dalee, too, learned it pretty fast. I just never learned it. And he recorded it. Remember that? He was forgetting his own songs. It was a trip. But he it was great spirit, great thing. For me, it was kind of scary. First time, going and doing stuff like that. I never thought of writing big pieces. So
that was a lot of fun playing that.
And yeah,
you
really.
Had to be, the thing about it, you had to be there. You had to be. It wasn't like you were just playing a song and mm-hmm. I'm not in the mood today, but I'll play the song. This thing, you had to be emotionally on it. So you couldn't just fake it, you know. So every time you played that thing, you had to be ready to do it, you know.
Yeah, I know.
So it was it was an experience for me, and I knew every time.
It was kind of draining on me. Yeah, I had to relive the whole thing.
You had to get into the character, you know.
Yeah.
And you couldn't just play the song. All right, I'm not in the mood today. No, you had to be. Because you had the improvised section. And,
lots of it.
You know.
And you did great on that. Because, Nels Klein recorded and outlined it, but then Joe Baiza took it to his world, which was great. Which was kind of the thing you want to do for as a bass player. You just want to set people up. You don't want to. The way the instrument is, it ain't wide enough. It's foundationist, and it can't make the whole sound. The guitar has so much more sounds, a wider breadth. So you set them up with some bass lines, starts and stops. But after that, it's so great to see them use their imagination and actually show people a side of themselves, even though they're working your tunes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it kind of weird writing songs on bass for people that way. Different than writing on a piano or a guitar. I think that shapes out the tune a lot more, right?
Yeah, I work better that way myself. I've always worked with bass players. So.
I know. I was going to say, Universal Congress, Ralph. Started working with Ralph, right?
Yeah.
And many collaborations. Ralph Gardetsky.
And we're playing again, Ralph. We have the Mechalodiacs again.
Again.
Yeah.
This is a band that's come and gone many times.
Yeah, now Klukas is playing trumpet and Wayne Griffin's playing drums.
Wayne's still on the drums. Yeah, great. He's been with you a long time.
Yeah, so it's a solid group. Like Saccharin, you know.
Really? Yeah. And, there was a version. There was a version that did a lot of gigs in Germany.
Universal Steve. Congress of, yeah.
Yeah, not Mechalodiacs, yeah. Pre-Mechalodiacs. Extension of the Universal Congress, and it was Rafi and Steve Moss
and Jason Kahn
on the drums. And I guess Jason and Steve ended up living in Germany, right?
Yeah, well, Jason decided he wanted to play free improvised music. Now he does electronic sounds.
Are they still living, both still in Germany?
Jason lives in Zurich.
Oh, Switzerland.
And Moss lives in Munich. And then the other bass player had Steve Gaeta.
Steve Gaeta.
He lives in Frankfurt. So they're all.
He stayed over too, right.
And there's a chance we might play in May.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a booking, because Sacra's going to go over there in middle of May to do all tomorrow's parties.
Mm-hmm.
And this German booking agent wants to organize a tour where Sacra plays and the old Universal Congress of. So I'll be doing both.
Twofer.
Yeah. If they can book that, so they're working on it.
And you ain't played with those guys in a long time, huh?
No.
But that was a pretty extensive thing. I remember you going over there a lot. You were touring over there more than here.
Yeah. 89 went over and just didn't know what was going to happen. But there was a big scene there for us.
Right.
Because of that magazine Specs, that German magazine.
Yeah, right.
It started off with Specs. Some writer from Specs, a German lady, came to an SST showcase in New York when they had one of those seminar things. I forget what it's called now.
CMJ.
It was at CBGB's, the gig, and all these bands were playing. And Universal Congress played first really early. There was about 20 people there.
Yeah, the good spot.
Yeah. And one of the people was this lady, this German lady, and she wanted to interview us because they were doing a piece on SST, and they were picking certain bands to do some things about. So they interviewed us in the back room there, and we went through our little joking routines we always did, but we realized, oh, this person's kind of serious, you know, this person with this funny accent. So we just started answering the questions more seriously and talking about music, and that was it. Well, who was that? Okay, whatever. But later it turns out they wrote this piece on Universal Congress of and SST and this magazine Specs. It had a lot of influence in Germany. So that's what got things going for us then. There was some interest. So we went over, not even realizing it, and sold, you know, packed shows and
that
kind of thing.
We'll pick it up. We're at the end of the first hour, January 24, 2010. Hold tight for hour 2. Man.
When I sleep, I have to put a towel with tape around so I don't stand it.
Oh, man.
January 24, 2010, second hour, Watt for Pedro show.
Tutte le volte che sosterremo la fiducia che si vive intensamente ed aspettare la morte. pensiero versato per paura della morte, ma io mi prendo il gioco della morte. È la vita che non riesco a disporre nei congelanti trascinati del tempo. Mi recai alle rosaie dietro a casa mia, le stesse che mi disturbavano quando studiavo e che non mi davano voglia da un po' di tempo. Senti il freddo del ferro sulla guancia mentre le vibrazioni aumentavano e l'aria mi si spostava intorno. Adesso ho vinto.
good cover rock band.
Yeah.
Watt from Pedro Show. Started the second hour with a bunch of stuff from Italy. First was Sigodi with I May Not Get There With You. And then Storia Divisi ad Edili by La Via degli Astronati. It's a Napoli band. And Vita Viscera by Zoo. You know Zoo. Roma
yeah,
band.
Yeah,
great cats. Perisiqua by La Carogna. And then Osarota by Mr. Occhio and his imaginary friends band. It's a one-man band. The guy plays guitar and drums. And
it's imaginary friends.
What else could it be?
You know these things where the guy's doing the cymbals between the legs and singing and harmonica. Yeah, it's funny. And then Easy to Use by Nekos, another Napoli band. Nekos is Japanese for cat, though. You would like them. They have dance beats and stuff. But Italy's in Europe, so let's continue the talk with Germany.
Yeah, I just asked what the crowds were like, the Germans like to play for.
Well, they're really enthusiastic, and they seemed to be really aware of what was going on with the underground music scene, even probably more so than Americans would be. They'd know this and who was in that band and what records came out, and they were into the independent music thing at that time, 80s, yeah. I guess.
This was before the wall came down.
Right.
So West Germany had a lot of money. When you would play Europe, most of your gigs would be German.
Right.
And, to pay for the tour and stuff, but a lot of Joe Beiser carved out a niche.
Right. A lot of the venues were subsidized by the government, and they'd have a cultural kind of venues, you know, that would do something every week. They'd have a dance troupe, and they'd have some play, and then next week they'd have a rock band from America or something. You know? So it was kind of like
a whole circuit
network
of that.
Like that.
You weren't playing like bars like you do in U.S. England was like U.S. too, but yeah, they were almost like teen centers or something to give kids things to do, and then also part of the culture, something that is just total merch here. You don't, you know. I guess there's some things for like painters, fine artists, but not popular, not like music like.
It was interesting. There were older and young, old and young people there, you know.
Yeah, there was.
So it's.
Yeah, people from hippie days.
Yeah.
Would go to punk shows in Europe, no problem. There was, and then it kind of changed, right? The dance music came and.
Yeah, things. I don't know how it's like, what it's like now, but.
Well.
It did start to change.
It did. I think. Also, a lot of maybe got worked by maybe too many U.S. bands that weren't were too generic and that kind of dried things. And also, the wall came down and they had to took a lot of money to bring the East in.
So all that was sort of not it wasn't around as much as it was before.
Right, right. Different situation.
I did it for 4 years and then I got tired of it because it almost seemed kind of began to be a little routine. And
yeah. Same old, same
old. We'll see you next year, you know, we'll do the same thing again. I started to feel like, oh, gosh, I can't go on like this.
I Love Lucy rerun. This week it's mayonnaise, next week it's pizzas. Ricky.
Yeah, that's the feeling I had. And the guys at that time in the group were just, I don't know.
Coasting?
Yeah. They just, the easier it got, it seemed the more people started to complain and,
oh, the wine factor.
Yeah, they didn't want
got
to
hyped
things
up.
And, wow,
nothing like a wine factor getting hyped up.
Remember when it was really hard and we had to do these things? Now it's so easy and you can't, you know.
But there was no belly aching before. Yeah. That's weird. Humans are like that. I've seen that situation a lot.
Sure.
You just don't appreciate it.
I guess when you're struggling, you just don't really.
Right, right. You bite the bullet, you get on with it.
Yeah.
You
don't. It's funny, though, before all that happened, though. In 1990, I did a tour with Jason Kahn. We did an improvised duo tour in the eastern, all of, like East Germany and some of the eastern countries. That's right after the wall came down. And it was really interesting just to see these cities at that time, you know, because you go into this place and it's just a new exposed place and it's kind of beat up looking.
Yeah.
Beautiful at the same time because there'd be big trees in the street.
Which cities did you hit?
I can't even remember anymore. Yeah, Prague. We played in Prague.
Budapest?
Yes. Budapest. And A lot of East German cities.
Poland.
Never played in Romania or Poland.
No. How about...
was that other Frankfurt, this East Frankfurt or whatever? No. That's the closest I got to Poland.
Okay.
Well, I mean, now I have Mechalodiacs, and I call Joe Buys a Congress of. And they're really similar. So.
Oh, there's a SoCal.
Yeah, right. So it's just Congress of.
Oh.
And then there's Mechalodiacs, which people get confused all the time between.
Okay, who's in this Congress of?
Stuart Liebig is playing
Stuart?
Bass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And it's the same. And Dan baseball. And Wayne and myself. So it's the same thing, but a different bass
with
player.
With a different bass.
Slightly different tunes, you know.
Okay, okay.
But those guys, I mean, they can play, you know. So I.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Congress with Stuart is more like a player's band. They just play. You can't. You know, maybe they rehearse once and then they play.
Right.
And Mechalodiacs is more a thing where we work things out.
Work out tunes.
Yeah, work tunes out and think about arrangements or subtleties like that.
Yeah,
that's the difference for me between those two.
Right. And I think a listener would pick up on some differences also. Let's play some more music. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
refill on your beer yet?
Yeah, I like them.
Well, I'm from Pedro's show. Thank you. We just heard a bunch of music from Japan. Start off with two at Tekigo by Wakine, Dodo by Tenko, Wann kann ich Sie wiedersehen, which is German. I think it's When Will I See You Again, by Akira Sakata. He's a saxophone player I got to play with, somebody from the free jazz scene in the 60s. I got to play with him with Jim O'Rourke. He's great. I Ate Yui Bing This Morning by The Ruins, something live from a gig of theirs in China. And then Sneak Attack by Bass Army. You know, I want to bring you over there.
Yeah, I just seen Melt Banana at the Troubadour.
Wild band.
Yeah, they were
that
really,
guy got
really good.
On the guitar. That's Tom Watson's favorite guitarist.
Oh, really?
Do you play with the mask on?
Yeah, he has this kind of thing over his mouth, like a dust mask or something.
A lot of pedals, and very wacky
very
compositions and execution. And that band is intense.
I can't believe they've been around that long, either.
Since early 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of drummers, but three other ones have stayed. They met at a language school. I got to interview one of them. I've gotten to do some gigs with them. But, I mean, there's a lot of different music happening over there. And they're one kind. Their own kind. There are some bands that kind of play with them, but I like over there the variety, so that's why I want to bring you over and check it out. What about U.S. tour plans? Zacharin?
Nothing like that.
No. Just this Europe adventure. Yeah. And recording?
You know, we're going to start recording. We keep trying to get going, but Zacharin moves so slow, you know. So.
Oh, there's a phase we forgot, this phase with Richie.
Oh, yeah, Richie, right. Yeah.
Because that's kind of like Saccharin revived, right?
Oh, when Richie came in.
You bring back the band, because the band was on hiatus while you were doing these Universal Congress and Michelodiac.
When Saccharin first started again.
Yeah.
And it's strange that the Saccharin that exists now with Brian Christopherson and Chris Stein has been together longer. And all the other
ones, yeah, right.
Previous Saccharins.
right. So that's right. They started with them, and then Richie came in.
We decided to try a vibraphone thing. And
is there recordings of this?
Live recordings. And we'd like to release something live with Richie on
it. Okay. But you guys never went in the studio?
Okay. No, never have.
Richie Hess was
a shame.
He was actually a drummer, too, and a vibes player, and he was in Saccharin for a while, and he got cancer and died a couple of years ago. But he really gave a different sound to Saccharin.
Those vibes.
That was a trip. He complimented you really well.
Yeah, we worked out arrangements for the vibraphone. And even the old songs, when we'd play them, we'd have the vibraphone play some of the
chords. Yeah, yeah. It was trippy.
Interesting kind of texture.
The closest thing I could think of is like a little bit like Captain Beefheart when he used the vibes, a little bit. Because it was still very much Saccharin music, but it was a different Saccharin music than all the other ones in a way. Because you never had a foil. You guys only changed rhythm sections. You never brought in another tenor, mid-range instrument.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so this is the first time you bring in a voice thing. There's never another singer. It's always you and Jack in the mid-range and above.
Yeah.
So this is the first time you brought in
another chordal instrument.
Yeah, right. That wasn't a drum and a bass, so it was really distinctively different sound. So you're going to record. You did have plans to record with Richie, though, huh?
I remember Nell's
telling me something.
We were working on things, and then Richie died. And
yeah.
Here we go.
promised land.
Principle that all men are created equal, and that the rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened.
Yeah, Smokey. It's good to be high and not drunk.
Why is it better to be high than drunk?
Oh, you have better language, better action, more activities, and more individual parties going on. You have better parties, better social life. It's better relaxing. No fighting, no clowning. It's more enjoyment. More enjoyable.
Been a goddamn fool, hanging out on that street corner with hoes and junkies, living my life solo. But D. Wayne Love walked into my life. He said, "Larry, I got a 12-step plan for you, brother. I'm too not for you people. We're gonna share his message with you." Step one,
you gotta consider yourself completely powerless under me, D. Wayne.
Step two,
you figure fats just gotta be jelly, cause jam just don't shake like that.
Step three,
make a search and inventory of all your good shit.
Step four,
inventory taken, hand it all willingly over to me.
Step five, D-Wayne.
Heaven divine, I am the real thing. Get down on your knees.
Step six,
and humbly ask me to remove your underthings.
Step seven,
and make ready for me to do my thing.
Talk about step eight,
knock it down, you ready to understand my kind of love. Loving women's, loving all God's creatures. Your divestment's complete. I may or may not be turned on by you. If I am turned on by you, I'll probably think you're about ready to become a lowly little reverend. Just making your way day by day in the congregation. Hustling for a dollar here, a dollar there. Bringing it all back to the all-powerful, almighty, all-wise D-W-A-Y.
Standing on the corner, money in my hand. Well, I ain't waiting for no taxi, honey. I'm waiting for my man. But I tell you, he ain't selling heroin. He's selling crack cocaine.
No, sir, Mr. Dope Fiend, no fish today.
Gone enough of that stuff, gonna move you up, yeah, to the higher plane.
So easy.
Sugar me up
in the main line.
Sugar me up
in the main line.
Sugar me up
in the main line.
The hype for love.
The hype for love.
Sugar me up.
The beat down the side.
Come on, sugar me up.
Ain't nobody can hide.
Come on, sugar me up.
Come on, deep way.
Your monkey's messing with bad medicine, and you
creamy rivulets start dripping, and I can catch the drops on the very tip of my tongue. I am prepared to awaken my body fully. By increasing the tone of my love muscles, my body coordinates its responses fully on demand, thus creating the ultimate, unbridled sexual satisfaction. For this, I teach another organ to respond more fully, a self-induced experience that deepens and prolongs the pleasure that's the basis for full sexual stimulation. I pick a time when I'm assured of lengthy privacy. I remove my clothes and sprawl on my bed, close my eyes, letting my own fingers explore my sensitive areas.
Brother Matt, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What was the motivation, inspiration?
Well, it started off with little Martin Luther King, Michael Jackson right. mashup, partially because last week on Martin Luther King, I played Bobby Kennedy instead of Martin Luther King.
That's right.
This was a little download I got from my old friend Mark Reveille. He's doing something called Beats Antique. And then we slipped into some big fat bass tones. Let's see, I don't even remember what we did. Oh, okay. Got something nasty there, huh? The ice cream girl. So, yeah. Take it for what it is.
Thank you so much, Brother Matt. And we're at the end of the second hour of the January 24, 2010 Watt Computer Show. Hold tight for hour three. January 24th, 2010. It's third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
So, ja, dann nimm es dir doch. Mein Gott, nochmal. Ich bestehe nicht auf meinen Handtuch.
No.
No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No.
But we have in effect done better.
For Pedro Show, start off third hour with Fist in the World by the Pea Bottle Men, a German band. Oh, these cats are from Germany too. They're called the Iron Fist of Foo, and their tune's called Puke All Day. And then Jobsworth, Twice Removed by Position Normal, and finally Lead by the unknown instructors.
Cool.
Unknown instructors. Joe buys it.
Yeah.
We've done three albums. Next week I'll have you, I'll flow you at bass thing.
Start the next.
We're going to do a volume four, right?
Yeah.
It's like the Led Zeppelin. Volume four. No, but maybe tell people. I've played a lot of unknown instructors on the show from all three of the albums. But maybe you can give a little, because that's one proj we haven't talked about in your music.
Yeah, that's a
vocabulary.
Well, Dan McGuire initiated that.
Dan's a poet from Toledo.
Yeah.
How?
I remember him from that time, and when I first met him when I was on tour with you, and we stayed at
the... Company Gigs, yeah, in Conquest Pad. I think it was a cloister.
What was that? He used to have a place in that big...
Like a church or some kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was a crazy night.
Yeah.
That was a wild night.
Yeah, we got kind of thrown out of there in the morning.
Somebody was in a hell of a rage.
Yeah, right. It was a big place, and it was had all this furniture in there, and I ended up sleeping in some, looked like a library or something, on a big couch. In the morning, I heard some kind of yelling, and I opened the door, and some guy with a broom's kind of trying to get Mike out from under a table.
Yeah, because I was under a table.
He found a place under a table in the hallway or something.
He's like brooming me out. Get out.
And he chased me out and chased us out. And oh no.
It was like after hours at the church?
It wasn't really.
It was a former church, I think, that got turned into like a cultural center or something.
It was a strange place. They had a lot of. It was a big place, a lot of hallways and rooms. And.
But this is how we met Dan. And Dan's instrumental in getting the unknown instructors together. Mm. Working with Joe, mainly. And then Joe brought me and George Hurley.
Well, the first time Dan just had us all get together and play, and then...
In fact, it was in Pedro, huh?
Yeah, it was at that... the studio's didn't
Karma.
Play
it's gone. It's gone now, They moved to Poughkeepsie.
We just went in and improvised, and then Dan did some things, and Jack did some things on there, and you did something, and I did something. Some spoken things. And then the second part of the project was later on, and...
At Total Access.
Right.
Dondo, with David Thomas.
Yeah, David.
We actually did two of them at once.
Right. So the last two albums were from one session.
So this time, we'll have, I think, a little scripted.
Yeah, yeah.
So that post, because all three of those records, the post recording thing is way bigger than the actual recording. Interesting with David Thomas. He kind of conducted us on some songs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He actually directed the pieces he was on.
Yeah, that's when Georgie was just a little bit late. And he gets a drum set up and he starts playing, he's like going through almost every lick he knows. He's like, whoa! And I thought I was having a flashback from hell or something. I was seeing it was dust on his cymbals. Whoa, I haven't played these in a while, huh?
I remember.
And he was going through all his licks to get practice.
He's warming up.
Yeah,
you got to warm up for a while.
Yeah, that was a trip.
But Dave, before he got there, David goes, where's this guy? And he goes, I can't believe you guys are so calm about it. He goes, maybe it's a West Coast thing.
I remember he kept taking off more and more clothes. Remember, he's in his chonies.
I know. He goes, he's a funny guy.
The studio was kind of hot.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get into my swim trunks. And he comes out, he's like, just has some swim trunks and some sandals. Just really relaxed in there, walking around. And he had his telephone microphone.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. He got some great sounds out of that.
That was an experience, because we only knew him from the Paroubu music. We didn't know him as a guy so much. That was very interesting.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And we're waiting and waiting. Inside, I wasn't so calm.
It's stressful when that happens.
It was very stressful.
And the engineer wasn't much help. He was sort of...
All right.
He was kind of a problem. He didn't... Apparently, he
didn't... Mindset on...
Right, and Dan had already told him what we wanted to do, and he tried to make something else happen, and there was some problems. He didn't like David's telephone microphone and things like that. He wasn't willing to experiment, I guess.
Some engineers, you know, they see the situation and they wrap their stuff around it. Other guys, like, you're bringing it to me.
Yeah, no flex factor.
Yeah. It's all about me. You guys, you know.
You guys are just, you know.
Toot your little tune. Let's play some music.
Yeah. tragically. The blinking of an eye, you'll be boarding a plane. Away from my phone messages, you won't have to ignore me then. The distance will take care of that.
girl who's got some booty in the bag. I want a girl who can drink beer, not all on with me. Still driving home.
Kind of trippy. What for Pedro show? We heard Old Town by Mind Grenade. And then Just Think from Saccharine Trust from the World Broken album. Kodama from Patrick Bowser. And I Want a Girl from 7 Foot Buffer. There's a band that you were in with Ralphie. Packing Up Weeba.
Oh, Putanesca. Right,
Putanesca.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what was that like? That was when I remember seeing some gigs and you'd be laughing. Lots of the gig, he was like cracking up.
Maybe right? It's Ralph would be making a face, I don't know. Yeah, it's, well, I think with a group like that, it's more supporting the singer.
Yeah.
So I like to play in different groups and use those situations for expand my experience in music, you know.
Yeah. Is there a Putanesca album?
There is one, yeah. And it's stuff we recorded a while back, and then it was remixed. We do a Captain Beefheart song once.
Wow, which one?
What is it? I forget the name of it now. But that was a trip trying to learn that. But like I was saying, with Putanesca, it's supporting the singer, but yeah. You know, when you got
Weeba's kind of, she's a trip. She's it's good, you know. She's very kind of outrageous a little bit.
She's kind of theatrical, and then her singing style is very smooth and precise, I guess. And then you have something like me and Ralph and Wayne and as her backup band. So it's a combination of this kind of nice singing with a kind of angular rhythm section.
Yeah, right.
You know, so we have to kind of keep things down and bring them up, and so my
a lot of dynamic.
Yeah, a lot of dynamic. So when I play with that group, it's all about supporting the singer and just not stepping on what she's doing. It was a trip learning that Captain Beefheart song, though, for Putanesca, because I never actually tried to play a Captain Beefheart song, and I'm listening to it going, "What is going on here?"
And then
I figured, yeah, right, why they would drop beats, and they have this thing where they play a cross things, you know, like someone would play one time, another played another time, and at the point when they meet up again, they make a change or something. It's interesting.
Yeah.
So there is a. It sounds like they're just going for it, but actually, this is planned out.
Yeah. Well, supposedly, you know, he did it all with his voice.
Yeah, and
all the parts, and then they'd have to.
The drummer would.
John French.
Yeah.
Yeah. Drumbo.
Yeah.
Would write him down and stuff. But Spock told me once about trying out for him. And he, one thing he required of you, you could play back what he would sing to you. Exactly.
Oh.
So he'd go, da 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 da, and you'd have to play that to him. Because that's the way he composed and stuff. Oh, wow. Yeah. Difficult. Difficult stuff.
Yeah, it's very strange music for that time.
Yeah,
I put 69 or something, Trout Mass replica.
Yeah, yeah. I put Nels through a thing like that. I asked him to do a, not, I don't know, to a carrot? Carrot as good as a diamond to a blind rabbit or something. And it was this solo guitar thing, and he did it. But it was like, whoa. And then we did Dirty Blue Jean. There's several versions of that, but we did the one off Dock at the Radar Station. That was intense. That was intense. In fact, I used it on a Beefheart tribute record.
Really?
Yeah. Man, it was hard to do, but that's when Nels was playing with Michael Preisner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it is hard to play that because you can't. You're playing your part, and you can't really listen to the other parts because you're playing against the other part in a way.
Yeah, right, right.
And you got to keep your part right, so when it comes to the point when it's going to change, they all match up again somewhere.
Right. If you're not steady, you all flub. You know, like the row, row, row your boat. And the other guy comes on. You got to stay on your row, row, row your boat, or is it, you know? It's hard. People are influenced by what they hear. Mm-hmm. So for you to stay the course, it takes some discipline. Difficult, especially with different timings. Yeah.
That's the only. Well, I learned that song. It's the only one I know, though. I don't remember the name of it now.
Yeah, you never got into copying a lot. I know. It was great. I remember you did Peace Frog. You still do.
Right.
Door
we still
song.
Do that, yeah.
But not a lot. A lot original. What do you do when you compose?
Well, it's different. It depends on different approaches. Because, like I said earlier, a lot of times my favorite way is with a bass player. And they'll have something. Seems like I need a kind of some foundation. And
yeah.
I create on top of that or something.
Bounce off.
Yeah. So if I do compose, sometimes I'll write a bass part.
Ah,
right off.
Ask the bass guy to play this.
Yeah, okay, here we have this. Or if I have some chords, and I'll have something, and then come to, you know, I can do the bass part later. But it's something I need to work on more is writing music. I don't really
Composition?
Do. Yeah.
I've like written enough tunes, though. Okay, write some more.
Write some more.
Me and Joe last recorded together. We did a, what was it? It's a country western song.
All right, yeah.
It had a lot of chord changes.
That was
they were country chords.
Well,
and I walked the bass on it, and something I'm not used to. And they played it really fast. They wanted to do it really fast.
It won't take nothing more than a bit of your time. There once was a cyclops that was stealing my mail. I caught him one early morning, pressed on his bail. My mail in hand, I could see my name. I chased him all so far but lame. My legs being that I was hurt in 4 years ago, blah blah blah. Long story. Anyhow, I chased him, but gave up, but saw where he ran back to. I called the police, but they hung up. A joke, they thought. Cyclops stealing your mail, your spam. Ha ha ha, please sir, don't jest. Anyhoot, here I am, sitting here mailless again. He gets up before me, the early bird catches the worm, which is my mail. So one day, cleverly me, I set a trap for the bastard. A nice set trap. Yes, I got me a mouse. Hanging upside down, I saw his only eye bleeding, and he just let out a small cry. Please, sir, please let me go. Please? No. Revenge has to play slow. Anyhow, any hoots, you're coming with me to my basement dungeon, and life shall be seized. Wiggle free, wiggle might, you'll never get, cause the rope's too tight. So come, hand it down, respect your new living sound. Yes, sir, I will go bravely, Cyclops savory. Now you know that we're the men that cursed this land from way back then. Fuck you, you've been stealing my mail, and now you'll pay. I'm a hateful old man, and this is the way. Here's my axe and there's my sword. Now prepare to die, you stupid boar. Please, sir, listen here. I've been reading your mail and paying your bills for you, cause I love you. I knew you back in 1983. That's when you saved me from falling on my left knee. Still I cannot run so well, but that's another story, another time. Don't wanna bore you with details.
Transistors, resistor, transfigured, transferred, faster than them, those, these, us, ours, we, thermistor, resistor, resistor, fixer, sitting here to ponder, those crescent sideways Muslim moons, like on the flags, but yet not the flags. No, deeper than any flag. Deepest down towards the source of your windless light. Sideway crescents, windless right. Eyes for me truly only sighs. Words can surely put it poorly, so I will sigh from inside while outside. They tell me they want to ride the big train. Well then, get on board with Coltrane, cause this here brain is insane. Every word of Mayday meant to say stay away, except maybe to weave flannel sleeve with threads of art and make believe, maybe transcend a brutal reality. I guess it was time for me to find you and dance with your mind. Machia Pai.
Meteors.
I fall into the lap of fate, the stars mean nothing. I leave them all to you. Instead, when I look up above, there are black velvet stars melting against celestial spheres, lunatic dolphins orbiting inflamed planets, an octopus pulsating with pure cosmic kicks, and amongst the craters where the ash has turned to soil, little shrubs are slowly showing green leaves. Intergalactic Aurora.
Okay. That was another one of those one-man bands, but this is the guy's from Brazil. And his name is Lendario Chucro Billy Man. And with Chicken Flow. Before that, we heard Shrub by Sal. A woman, yeah, pig. And then Maji Yabai by Unknown Instructors. First song off the third one. And we started off with the Cyclops from Foot. Joe, got plans for future?
Well, yeah.
You're talking about some touring for SAC, some recording for SAC.
Recording with Saccharin, and hopefully maybe doing some touring over there in Europe.
What about recording Nickelodeon?
Yeah, maybe so. Someone's asked us to do something for that with that group, so we'll see how that goes.
Of course, the fourth unknown instructor.
Yeah. But that's kind of all I've got going right now.
And getting your arm well.
Yeah, right. That kind of thing.
That's such a hell. Such a hell. Because, you know, it's risky with the surgery, the first one you had. And it went so well. And then there's this other thing on top.
Yeah, just my luck.
Criminy.
But well, with carpal tunnel, it's so painful. When you start to play. It's, especially holding chords, it's just this pain comes into the hand. And but that's fine now, but not with cubital
tunnel. Now you got the numb thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What carpal tunnel and what's the other one?
Cubital tunnel.
Cubital tunnel.
Yeah.
So, well, man, anybody who works a guitar like you deserves to have that shit be gone.
Yeah.
my decree, my wish, my
hope. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, because like that doctor told you, stop playing guitar. Bad advice.
Doctors, what do they know?
Yeah, what do they know? So, forget that advice. Just
well, for me, guitar is sort of an outlet. So
yeah, of course,
it's hard not. It's
cut that like off,
like smoking a cigarette. I don't know, you know, something you do. You know, what am I going to do? I'll just play some guitar now. You know, practice or play. So it's
foot organ. Don't want that. You don't want that. But so great. I mean, the whole thing, an adventure you picked up on your own, you've been continuing on your own. It's all your own vision. It's great.
Yeah, I've been playing since I started when I was 27. And
yeah. And just I did it because you wanted to do it. And it's heroic for me. It's inspirational. If I get feeling sorry for myself a little bit, no, look at Joe Bison. If he can do it, you can do it. Why? So, thank you for being there for me. And, this fourth, I look forward. Hope I give you some good foundations. And thanks for being on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Great to have
you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and come back again.
All right.
Next time, bring some music of these new things that you got going, too.
All right.
I'd like to play them for the folks. It's in the January 24th, 2010, Watt from Pedro show. Keep your powder dry.